Let's just do this. Get going. Okay, let me... Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, November 22nd, 2019. I always get confused at the year. I was about to say 18, and then it's no, it's 2019.
It's 2000! Actually, which is almost 20 years ago, which is just ridiculous and kind of annoying, you know? I actually still go Argentina for some reason before the, like, sometime in the 90s.
Yes.
They wanted to move their airports to the future. And a company called Argentina Airports 2000 was formed that runs most of the airports. They privatized a lot of them, runs the major international airport in Buenos Aires. The thing is that it is still called Airports Argentina 2000 in almost 2020. And honestly, I just keep saying this is ridiculous. This is like, gee, thank you. Backwards looking airports. Actually, they have been remodeling their airport quite well, and it's actually turning quite amazingly nice. So, but anyway, but I think they should get rid of the dumbass name.
Switch it to like 1980s or something.
Maybe 2100.
2100.
Yeah. Go future.
Yeah. That. There you go. Anyway, we have an agenda. Obviously, the big topic of the week is the impeachment stuff. We will start out with impeachment. We will talk about it until we feel like we are done with impeachment. And that's going to be our big topic. But we have a number of smaller topics that we're going to try to get to as well. There's the whole thing with Trump's funny, not quite right visit to his doctor. There was the Democratic debate. There's been some developments in Israel. There was a bunch of emails from Steve Miller that came out. There are also protests all over the world. Like,
literally all over the freaking world.
Yeah, practically name a country other than the United States, and they're having huge ass protests.
And we've had some not recently. I mean, I was at one last year.
Yeah, but these are like in lots of these countries, they're like continuous, ongoing, massive protests. Yeah.
Well, like I said, if you remember at the beginning of the Trump administration, weren't we having them like that, like repeatedly for, it seemed for like months, and then we all of a sudden we got tired?
No. even there, it was only like, there were only a few big ones. Like, it wasn't like an ongoing everyday sort of thing. Anyway, we have that as a separate topic. So
we do.
We do. We will get to that later on unless we get too tired before we get to that and give up, which, you know, who knows?
I mean, I know I want to take a nap already.
Yeah. I mean, we are that boring.
No, it's not that. I am trying to help my son learn to go to the bathroom at night by himself.
Okay.
And this has entailed basically me awaking in the middle of the night and taking him to the bathroom so he doesn't
go with bed. I understood. Right? Yep.
This has been going on for weeks now, and my wife wasn't here in town either. And it's been basically me waking up every night and then trying to go back to sleep. Some nights I do better about the going back to sleep quickly. On some of the nights I'm not. So I am like really running a really bad sleep deficit right now at this point, accumulated over weeks and weeks of this. I'm not doing too, I'm not too hot on this.
I feel you. Anyway, our main topic is impeachment. As we are recording this, it is Thursday evening U.S. time, and the last of the currently scheduled public hearings have finished up. We've had basically 2 weeks of hearings. I forget, there were a few days we didn't have them, so it wasn't, 10 days of hearings. But we had 2 weeks of hearings, We've had all kinds of witnesses, almost all of which are names that we've never heard before, you know, before this all played out. So we haven't gotten like the big names because all of them refused to testify. But there've been quite a few fairly compelling testimonies.
Well, I mean, come on, we got some big names. I mean, well, or maybe it's just because we're mainlining this shit on a regular basis, at least according to the time I spend on Twitter, according to my phone, it seems to be a lot. Okay. But you know, we had Sondland up there,
well,
right?
He's not a big guy. I mean, this is
who do you call? Okay. So in this thing,
I would say big? Giuliani, Pompeo, Mulvaney. Okay.
Like, but these people were very deeply involved in it. It's not like these are peripheral characters.
No.
Volker, Sondland. I mean, these are not, you know, it's not like, what was it? What was the stupid thing that what's his name said recently? The triple hearsay bullshit or whatever. A lot of these people were first, you know, first person participants in this, thing.
Now, one of the things I want to say, like, I don't think we're going to go person by person and review their testimony. There've been plenty of other places doing that, and I can't even remember and keep track of all the names and details anyway. But I think the theme is, you know, we've had, with the exception of Sondland, who is a political appointee, most of these folks have been career professionals who it's been, you know, when you watch them testify, it's been very, very clear. They know what they're talking about. They are experts in the field. They know what is going on. They've got full command of the details. You know, most of them are meticulous note takers and, you know, very impressive people. And particularly on this last day, which is fresh in my mind, we had Fiona Hill, who is the has been the Russia expert in the Trump administration until she left a little while ago. She ran circles around the people questioning her. You know, she, you know, just fundamentally knew everything that was asked cold. And you know, clearly, you know, these career people know their stuff, you know?
So she was an expert.
Yes. Imagine. Wow.
Imagine that.
And, the picture you got from collectively all of these people is just, frankly, what you and I said was already true last week, just more so, which is that we knew the picture. We knew the rough picture of what happened with the whole Ukraine situation, but they've fleshed out those details.
Right.
Bringing more and more details, with more and more people bringing their views that substantiate that from different perspectives. So it's not just one person said, it's you got five people basically saying that they had the same experiences and one by one demolishing all of the various defenses. Because we had the, you know, like you were just saying, we had the, you know, it's hearsay, triple hearsay, quadruple hearsay.
Right.
Well, as we progressed through the process, we got people who were closer and closer to the events until on the last day of testimony, you know, we had the guy who was sitting at the table when Sondland was on the phone with Trump and was like, yeah, I heard Trump talking.
Right.
And you had Sondland and, you know, the first couple days you had people who were one step removed. Well, the very next day you had people who were right there at the table,
right,
you know, or who were listening to the phone call, all of this kind of stuff, you know, and you had defenses of, well, it wasn't really a quid pro quo. Then the guy comes in and says, oh yeah, it was very much a quid pro quo. You know, you have, and one by one, each of these things.
Well, I've heard the other defense I've heard recently. Well, he didn't use the words quid pro quo. And I'm just like, oh, God, you fuck.
Yeah.
You idiots. You understand what I'm saying? Oh, Mr. Zelensky, I want to offer you a quid pro quo. Because he didn't say that.
Right.
It's not a quid pro quo.
But even then, so like,
You understand the level of stupidity of defense that they are arriving at this point.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, and look, this hasn't changed since last week. Last week, Yvonne, you started out our discussion of it by saying they're not even bothering putting up an actual defense.
No.
They're just like talking about, you know, oh, have you looked into Ukraine? What about Alexandra Chalupa? And
right.
What, you know, Hunter Biden, why haven't we talked to Hunter Biden? What about the whistleblower?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
All of this kind of stuff, which isn't actually addressing the facts at all. And that brings us to sort of where are we after that? Yeah, they provided a lot more detail. They provided a lot of evidence. I've heard numerous experts talking on TV in the last few days, including, by the way, some people on Fox saying that this evidence is absolutely damning. It would be enough to convict in a court of law. It's all out there. It's clear that this happened. But this is not a court of law. And you have a clear block with the Republicans, saying that it doesn't matter. And again, they're trying to, a lot of the Republicans would like to go to what we've said is always where they have to end up being, which is, yes, he did it. Yes, it was a bad idea. Yes, he shouldn't have done it, but it's not impeachable. Okay. And you and I have said on this show for weeks and weeks, it has to end up there. And a lot of Republicans clearly want to go there. Representative Hurd from Texas, who is considered one of the most moderate Republicans in the House right now, who's already announced he's not running next time around, was one of the folks that they looked at like, hey, if any additional Republicans besides Amash, who's no longer a Republican because of this, if anybody else is going to flip, maybe it would be Hurd. He came out at the end of this whole process and said exactly what I just said. Look, it was bad, but not impeachable. But lots of the others aren't even going there because the president has made clear that he views anything other than a full-throated defense saying he did nothing wrong is a betrayal.
Correct.
And so they're, you have them like we're getting into contortions to try to figure out how to defend, or like I said, they're mainly distracting. I mean, it's not even, nobody has directly said this is good.
I gotta admit that I would really, just for entertainment purposes, just would like to see one of them come out. Oh, this is great.
Yeah, this is what should have happened. Like,
this is how we should handle policy. Every president. Yes.
Yeah. And that's not happening. But there's nobody flipping. There's no Republicans in the House that are saying, yep, we're going to vote for impeachment. Now.
But even forget about that part. I mean, what you just mentioned about the fact that they won't even say that it's wrong.
Right. Although the Hurd did say that, but nobody else really.
Yeah. And Romney and in the House, we're talking House, but you know, but there are very few Republicans that will just actually call this out for what it is.
Even the ones who sort of, you suspect off the record, feel that way are trying their best to avoid actually saying anything.
Right.
Other than, you know, this is ridiculous. The process is wrong. All of the distraction stuff we're talking about.
Yeah.
And as, you know, I mentioned on the show a few weeks ago, I think it was on the week that you weren't here, Yvonne, that from a strategic point of view, if there were any conscientious Republicans in the House, there's no reason for them to go out on this ledge, because the impeachment is going to happen no matter what they do.
Right.
So why should they burn their career over going out on that ledge?
Principle? I know, it's so quaint. I just had that conversation at dinner with my wife.
So silly, Yvonne. What are you even thinking? I gotta
admit that I know we're laughing about this, but it really, honestly, just it is depressing.
Yes, it is.
Their absolute lack of any, just the.
I mean, we had a mosh.
Okay.
And he got essentially kicked out of the party for it. I mean, he quote unquote left, but he didn't really have much choice.
Is it that important? I mean, is it that important to them? I mean, do they? It's just so that just, I mean, I guess, you know, we talk about some people have been talking about what it takes to be a politician and the type of people that go into politics and so forth, right? And that in many cases, they are very self-absorbed, very self-interested people. A lot of them are. And I guess if you think about that, you know, I guess I shouldn't be sitting over here just throttled at the fact that none of these people will just say anything.
Well, and the thing is, on the Republican side, well, I guess this would apply on the Democratic side too in a reverse situation, but it's not only giving away their political career by saying, okay, Republican primary voters will vote me out next time if I do this, but a lot of these folks count on going into sort of the conservative lobbyist ecosystem after they're no longer in office, and this would probably cut them off from that as well.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I guess I just can't.
The other thing to consider, and I've heard variety of things on this, and I think the answer is it's different for different House members. But there's a certain portion of them, like, I think my default position is, well, of course these guys know. They all see the evidence. They all know this is true. They all know Donald Trump is a crook. They're just willing to put up for it because of what they get in exchange out of the transaction, right? But this clearly, at least a subset of the Republican Party, and perhaps a fairly large set of the Republican Party, that actually full-on believes what they're saying, that actually believes that this is trumped up nonsense, et cetera.
I don't actually, that's bullshit. I don't believe that. Look, even who was the guy that they asked that if you pulled him anonymously in the Senate, it's like how many?
Well, that was Flake.
Yeah.
Who went on the record. There was some other senator who said it off the record.
Right. I mean, so that's not true. They don't really believe it. They don't.
Well, no, but even what you said there, like there would be 30. There's a bunch left.
There would be 30.
Right?
No. There would be a bunch left. Yeah, there is a group.
And I think that's even more so in the House.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, and this is the, all of this conspiracy stuff too. I mean, same thing. I know we're going back to a conversation we've had before, but some of these folks have bought into their own nonsense. I don't know which.
I agree that there is a good group. Yes, that has definitely bought into this, into their own nonsense. Yes,
they really believe this stuff about Ukraine. Really, are the ones who tried to interfere in 2016. Forget the Russians.
I mean, you know. I gotta admit that today's like testimony by Fiona Hill on that was just, she basically slapped that very hard.
Yeah. Now, on the one hand, Nunes tried to like inoculate himself from that by saying, no, look, we put out a report when we were in the majority about the Russian interference. We're not denying the Russian interference. There can be both.
Bullshit.
But the thing is, what they're trying to draw a false equivalence where on what we have on the Ukrainian side is a couple of op-eds that were written and maybe a couple of meetings And that's it. at least in terms of what's come to light so far.
And, yeah.
You know, whereas on the Russian side, we have tons and tons and tons of evidence of a massive ongoing campaign that's still continuing today. You know?
Yep. Still, and I think that that's the critical part, that that is continuing today. And that these guys keep repeating stuff that is being pushed by Russian media. And the amount of gullible pinheads that are out there that just eat it up is just stunning. I have to admit that I didn't believe in the past that people were that stupid. And I didn't believe that in the past. Now I am completely convinced that they are that stupid. I mean, they are just fucking idiots.
We're not just talking about the, you know, Ukraine did it, not Russia. There's like the whole universe of these things, you know, about how this entire alternate timeline of the last few years.
Yep.
That seems to be, you know, step by step by step, at every piece you look at, there's this alternate interpretation that doesn't hold up when you examine it closely.
No.
But lots and lots of people believe.
Yep.
And because, you know, a lot of this has, you know, all of this InfoWars nonsense, some of which is now being picked up by Fox News, is believed by enough of a portion of the population, then, well, of course, yeah, some of your Congress folks believe it too.
Breathe in, breathe out. Okay, all right, okay.
I would actually feel slightly better about this, to be honest, if my previous belief was that these are just cynical bastards who know the truth, but are intentionally manipulating people with falsehoods to get what they want.
Some of them are.
But I'm increasingly convinced that a lot of them actually believe what they're saying, and that's even scarier.
That is even scarier. I have to totally agree with you on that. Yes.
So anyway, back to the bottom line, though, is even Hurd, who was considered the Republican most likely on these committees, not in the whole House, but most likely to potentially go the other way, came back essentially with, okay, yeah, he did some stuff wrong, but not impeachable. That is very likely the furthest we're going to see any of these Republicans go in the House right now. And so it's looking increasingly likely at this time. Again, always with the caveat, unless something new blows up, which, who knows?
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Look, even Trump admitting it in public doesn't sway them.
Right. I mean, which he has.
Right. And it's people still, and you know what the funniest thing is? That I'm talking to people who I tell, but Trump admitted it in public, and they're like, no, he didn't. Jesus Christ. I mean, you had Mulvaney, Giuliani, and Trump, and you still don't believe it? Even though they flat out went and said they did it? No. I'm like, God.
Well, and that's not even the, you know, okay, they did it, but it's actually okay, or they did it, but it's not impeachable.
No.
It's they didn't do it, even right. Though they said they did.
They did. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried to argue with certain people that I think like this, basically going through them step by step, all the facts about it, they would still deny it.
Yeah.
I was to the point that I just wanted to fucking like throw my phone at the wall. I'm just like, this is just.
Yeah. And honestly, and when I say something else had come up, I mean, I'm practically thinking at this point, you would have to have something on the order of, you know.
What? Trump raping somebody live on global TV?
Exactly. Exactly. You'd have to have something like that.
I guess that would be it. Yes, that's about it. At this point,
I'm not sure even
he would lose all support.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to have something of that magnitude where you had you had to have video. You have to have video, audio, everything.
No, because if it's video, then they'll say it's doctored. Seriously. No. Yeah.
You're right. You're right.
Fake. No, live. Live.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, we are hurtling down the path towards impeachment in the House and acquittal in the Senate. There's some strategy issues still to play here. Like, do the Democrats, like, from what I was hearing from various people interviewed today after they wrapped up the testimony, the Democrats are looking at having the Intelligence Committee wrap this up and send it to Judiciary next week, and then have Judiciary look at it and actually pass out articles of impeachment in December. And they're looking at, okay, this is it. Let's wrap up the Ukraine stuff in a bow and move on. We're not going to wait for anything related to taxes or emoluments or the Russia stuff or anything else. Let's just wrap up this Ukraine stuff and send it on over. And then the Senate can do what it likes with it. What do you think, Yvonne? Given where we are now, is that the right way to go?
I don't think it really makes much of a difference right now, does it?
I mean, the place where I see it, it makes a difference to timing, right? And to timing and messaging. Because here's the thing. Once the Senate has it, they could call Hunter Biden. They could make the whole trial in the Senate all about Ukraine 2016 involvement. And Hunter Biden, and yeah, they could do all kinds of crazy nonsense if they wanted to.
Of course, you know, you could have sent this up, do it, and then do it again.
Yes, but nobody on the Democratic side seems to be even the slightest interested in that. They want to get it done and out of the way. I know I am like a broken record, which is an analogy that our younger listeners may not understand, but
dot, dot, dot.
Yes. Dot, dot, dot. KK. No. Okay. Not K.
No. Okay. Not KK. Okay.
Anyway. But to me, like, if you do not believe you are going to get removal in the Senate, then as much as people say this is distasteful, and like every once in a while, some Republican says, ha ha, they admit it. It really is about the politics. No. Yeah, it really is about the politics. Sorry. If you are not going to get a removal, then the primary purpose of this entire exercise is to hurt Republicans for the 2020 election.
Correct.
Both President Trump and any swing state Republican senators or representatives. And so you want to maximize that effect. Unless you are going to get removal, if you actually think you're going to get removal, it changes everything. But if you are not, then I feel like you want to actually keep it in the House where you're actively doing investigations. Like, they should be just as aggressive about, say, emoluments and Trump sending money to his own businesses as they have been about Ukraine. And we should spend the next month having public testimony from witnesses talking about that, you know. And then, you know, there's enough of these topics where we could, and I've joked in the past, we could have theme weeks. Maybe it's a little bit more than a week. Maybe it's a month each or something like that. But, you know, say, okay, Intelligence Committee is done with the Ukraine stuff. Now let's hear from the committee that's investigating financial issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I realize part of the problem is he's been successfully obstructing a lot of those investigations. But surely there's a way to do something about that anyway, based on what's already in the public record. There's plenty already in the public record about the wrongdoing. You don't necessarily need those documents or those witnesses to substantiate it, because it's all out there.
Right.
You know, you know how often he goes to Mar-a-Lago, and you know how much it costs the federal government every time he does.
Right.
Yeah. Just as an example, there have been things coming out due to freedom of information requests on that whole Doral thing already.
Right.
In terms of how that was added at the very last minute and other things were kicked off, and that it didn't really seem to match the requirements that were given in the formal process. You know, so yeah, there's other stuff to look at. And so I think that, you know, if, and, you know, I'm not, obviously, and Nancy Pelosi has proven to be very good at what she does. So grain of salt there. But I would think you would want to say, keep this on the House side as long as you can investigate all of these other things as well. Plus, you know, given what we already have the self-impeachment pattern, he'll do something else.
Well, he's very good at that. Yes.
He's very good at that. And then if I had to pick when to send it to the Senate, I would send it to the Senate just in time for the Republican National Convention.
Okay.
If I was going to do the timing, that's when I would send it. And yes, that's like, you know, another, I think that's in like September, August, somewhere around there. I forget exactly, but sometime next fall. So yeah, that's a long way away still. But I think there's plenty that could be done on the House side.
I don't think that we can hold it all the way that long. I mean, that's part of the problem. I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean,
well, because people get tired of it. And there's already, there's already some preliminary information, and, you know, polling being what it is, it takes a while for us to see trends. But there's already some preliminary information that the support for impeachment peaked right after Nancy Pelosi supported it and is actually on the way down again as people are sort of tiring of this, tiring of hearing about it.
I can believe that.
And, and in the, not so much in the Trump approval ratings, which are right where they've always been. And they're actually slightly better right now than they've been in a little bit. But they're just still bouncing around in the same -5 to -15% range that they have been. However, in the general election matchup polls, which, you know, again, long time to election, take with certain grains of salt. But Trump has been improving in those, doing better against various Democrats, roughly since this impeachment stuff started. So there's at least some evidence that it may actually be doing what, you know, the Republicans had said all along and actually helping Donald Trump a little bit right now.
Yeah.
But it's very preliminary, very slight. I'm not willing to go out there. I think for the most part, it's probably noise right now as opposed to something
that's
real.
That's what I was going
to
say. Yeah. I mean, I think everything that we've seen in terms of moving, in terms of opinion polls, all
is
of that.
Nothing gets moved by anything.
Because that's my point. Nothing is, I mean, that nothing. People are just not having, no, they don't care, man. They just don't fucking care. They don't fucking care.
Everybody is on their sides and nothing matters.
Yeah. Nothing matters. It's just fucking amazing.
Yeah. It's so depressing. And so this brings up another thing, which is, okay, let's move a little bit further down the road. Let's say it plays out like everyone expects. He gets impeached. He gets acquitted. Then what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, that's pretty much she wrote on that part.
Well, one thing is I would predict just like his victory lap after the Mueller testimony was to go commit more crimes. I would bet you if he gets acquitted in the Senate, he would immediately go commit more crimes.
Well, that certainly sounds like one of his choice methods of celebrating his, you know,
and
his,
then
his victories.
And then, you know, I really don't know that Democrats would have the appetite to do it all over again during an election year. And so we go right into the election. And then what if he wins? Which is very possible. Just to put that out there. It is
very possible.
It's very possible. I mean, the Democrats
are... What the hell? You know, look.
Yes.
It'd be very depressing. I mean, I don't know what the hell else to say.
Well, I think, you know, fundamentally, like, we've seen so much damage from what has already happened. If we get impeachment, acquittal, then a re-election, then all of the damage that we've had to start with is just going to get much worse.
Again, but which we haven't touched on that subject yet.
Yeah.
Look, this guy didn't go to the hospital last Saturday because he was feeling all peachy dory and he was like trying to get like some early tests on his healthcare. You know, I mean, right now we're talking about what the hell happens after this impeachment, right? We're talking about the election. We're talking about what the hell the results of what the fucking poll is.
And you're still convinced that he'll drop dead before then.
And you know what? You don't think that there is a good shot of this? Look, this guy, I'm telling you, listen, as much as we talk about the possibility of him winning, we talk about about the impeachment. We talk about this right in hypotheticals right now. What do you listen? The stress level that he is under is insane. Okay. All right. It is insane. And he did wind up in the hospital on Saturday. Okay. All right. This bullshit cover story.
It was routine tests.
It's just absolute fucking just complete and unadulterated bullshit. Okay. All right. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous explanation I've ever heard. So, you know, I mean, I'm still saying, dude, this guy is not in good health. And look, I mean, you want to talk about mental health? That stupid note that he was carrying with him in order to remember his damn bullet points? I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
So, I'm sure all of you have seen this, but this was during one of the testimonies that was particularly damaging to him. I think it was Ambassador Sondland. He was heading out to wherever he was heading out on Marine One, and as he sometimes does, he talked to reporters on the way. He wrote himself a little note on a piece of paper that he read to them, and then walked.
Little. It was not a little note. It was a big note. It was huge, okay? In big letters, because he needed to remember, I mean, some of the silliest talking points that, I mean, a normal adult really does not need that kind of, how do I say, a crib note?
I believe it is, I want nothing, I want no quid pro quo, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, really? He needed that written down because he couldn't remember it unless he wrote it down?
Well, to be clear, it was quoting something Sondland had said in his testimony that Donald Trump had told him. So he was trying to match what Sondland said.
Again, you really needed that written in like that in order to remember that? I'm
you're speechless. Maybe you need a note to remember what you want to say.
I need a note to remember what the hell I want to say. No, I find it. Look, this guy is impaired. There's just you can't tell me that this guy is not impaired. I mean, the guy is having difficulty even remembering his thoughts, expressing his thoughts, sharing them. I mean, this guy has to be impaired. There's no way this guy is not impaired. I really believe that right now at this point.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, there's been plenty of evidence of it. Like lots of people have come to the same conclusion as you have. But of course, we're not going to get anything that sort of is unofficial. You know, we're not going to get a Trump doctor's note that says anything negative.
No, we're not. Not at all. So we just keep getting the same bullshit. But I do think, I'll tell you, I mean, look, this was not a routine visit on Saturday. Something must have gone wrong. Something. We don't know what it is, but I'm telling you, this is going to come back soon.
Well, and you know, in terms of how wrong, right, it could, something must have been weird that caused them to go to the doctor, but he was only there a couple hours, so it's not like, you know, something that required a procedure and hospitalization and all that kind of stuff. So it's...
Was it just a couple of hours? Because I saw that he went there, and we really didn't know exactly where the hell he was until really the next day. I see that he was out of visibility for just hours.
Now, I thought it was just afternoon, and he returned to the White House.
That was the question. I don't know the answer to that.
He visited people at the hospital while he was there. I don't have the exact timeline in front of me, but my understanding measured enough.
They said that he visited people there at the hospital. Did anybody confirm that? Did anybody external confirm that? Because I heard the White House say that. I didn't hear anybody else confirm, oh, yeah, he was over there with this guy.
I thought I saw pictures, but I could be wrong.
I did not see any pictures of that. I saw no pictures that I know of. I mean, you guys listening, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw no pictures of this. And I didn't see a confirmation really on when the hell he really made it back to the White House. For real. We know he made it back, but not how long he was there and when.
Okay, hold on. Okay, after a little bit of Googling, you're right. I have not found a definitive timeline. I've seen something that says he was, you know, it was more than 2 hours at the hospital. I've seen multiple things talking about people who he met at the hospital, but they were all the White House spokesman says.
Correct. There's no external confirmation, no pictures, no nothing. This was just White House saying that. Nobody externally confirmed that. Nobody confirmed the timeline. Nothing. I have not seen anybody with that. We know he got to the hospital. We don't know for how long. He says he met people. Nobody's confirmed this. And then much later on, you know, we know he's at the White House.
I believe it was the next morning he had a cabinet meeting.
Right. It was the next day.
Actually, I think that was not Monday.
That was Monday. No, on Sunday we still didn't know Dick. No, What nobody saw him on Sunday. It wasn't really until Monday.
Okay, and people have also pointed out things like, for instance, the doctor was shadowing him when he got out of Air Force One on one of his trips the other day. As well. So I don't know. Like, I really hate to do the pure speculation without evidence stuff.
Well, this is not complete speculation. Look, we know he went to the hospital, and we know that they haven't fully disclosed what the hell happened. And we know that they were like very coy about his timeline, about how long he was there, when the hell he got back to the White House, and when the hell he came back. All of that information has not been given. Okay, so that we know. Okay, and from a guy that we know tweets like nonstop and like communicates so forth or whatever, to have that kind of level of silence for that extended period of time,
well,
is not.
There were some tweets.
There were tweets
in that time period, including, you know, one saying how he was fine.
And do we know he wrote them?
No, we don't know that about any of his tweets. Like, we know.
Well, come on. There are some we know for sure he wrote.
There are multiple staff members who tweet for Donald Trump, and we've had interviews with them saying that they studiously imitate his style.
Yeah. Whatever. Bullshit.
I mean, there's some that are clearly not him.
Right. There are some that are clearly not him. My question is, were there some that we know were clearly him? Because we know there certain are. So, and that's my thing. So that's why I am like, you know what? Whatever the timeline and whatever how long he was and what the hell, you know, we didn't visibly see him on Sunday, that's for sure. So, I don't know. So, anyway, I mean, you know, at least my prediction may be happening.
Well, I don't know. We still see. I think you are right that there are signs of decline, both physically and mentally. But that doesn't mean something is imminent, though.
True. I mean, it's, you know, it could be just, you know, yeah, but you know.
And there could be ups and downs and blah, blah, blah. He had a bad weekend. He's fine now.
He could be. You know? Could possible. Possible.
So, yeah, I mean, but...
And he has not been forthcoming about anything related to his health.
No, I mean, he could have a freaking cold and he would hide that.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, we really about his health. We just like his wealth, his taxes, his everything. We don't know what damn thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that was the latest impeachment, and we moved right into the Trump health stuff. I guess to summarize on the impeachment stuff, I'm very curious to see exactly what the Democrats do next. I think it looks like they're full speed ahead, wrap up the Ukraine stuff, send it to judiciary, send it to the Senate by the end of the year. I am not sure that is the right approach, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We shall see.
And meanwhile, I am sure that, as you predicted, there will be a live video of Trump raping a 13-year-old sometime in the next few weeks, and that still will change nothing.
Given who the Republicans are like right now, I'm sure that the answer is yeah, it won't change anything.
Yeah, no, I don't expect any actual such video. But I do, however, expect that there will be more things that Trump does that are impeachment worthy from now until he's not president anymore.
Oh, that's for sure.
There's just no avoiding it.
The man is good at that. That he's shown himself very skillful at, yes. And he surrounds himself by nothing but the best, so.
And so we're going through this exercise to see if the Democrats can use that fact in any way, either not to remove him necessarily, because the Republicans are going to do what they do, but at least to inflict some damage. And again, it doesn't look like anything matters. Nothing matters.
Nope.
Okay, let's take a break, and then we will hit our other four remaining smaller topics. We will be back after this.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back. Yvonne, we have the Democratic debate, protests around the world, Israel, or Steve Miller, or random new topic that you've thought of that wasn't on our list. Where do you want to go first?
Well, why don't we talk about a little bit about the protests around the world? And you know, these protests, okay,
So let me just list, like,
my life has been disrupted with these protests. Let's be clear about this,
Before you get to your disruption, let's just get the magnitude of this. We have Hong Kong, Bolivia, Colombia, Chile, Iran, Iraq, I believe Algeria, and I'm sure I'm forgetting more because I've heard.
We had Puerto Rico earlier in the year, but we haven't protested in months.
Okay, but like just within the last few weeks, all of those countries I've mentioned, plus more, like I'm not even remembering all of them. And what I'm talking about here is not like a little protest here, a little protest there, one-off on one day. No, we're having major, huge numbers of people filling the streets practically every day, over and over and over again. And each country is a little bit different in terms of what they're protesting, what the issues are, what their tactics are, what's going on. But it seems to be like, I can't remember a time that this has occurred in so many places together. Like, I mean, I will say
that probably if you went back to the 60s, that this is about the time, 60s, early 70s, it was a time when we had something like this. Well, we had mass strikes in Europe.
I have a closer one, like the Arab Spring.
Arab Spring, yeah, true. That's another one.
We had a whole bunch of countries where we were having things like this happening at the same time. But most of the time, when you hear about things like this, it's sort of like, oh, this one country is having a thing right now. And then that works out however it works out, which usually ends up either in a revolution and a change of government, or the existing government massively repressing it and squashing the protests. One of those two things tends to happen. But I don't remember like this happening in so many places at the same time. And so my curiosity was like, what's happening here that's causing it to be all over the place at the same time? Is it like just people being able to organize through social media and stuff like that? I do think that
is a huge influencing factor in allowing people to be able to organize protests far more quickly and effectively. You cannot discount how that has changed the dynamics.
And one of the keys here too, and we've seen this in Hong Kong, but I believe some of these others as well, is they are intentionally leaderless.
Right.
So that you don't have, oh, this is the guy who's organizing this, or this is the committee that's organizing this. You have these sort of much more organic things so that the police can't come in and get one person or a small number of people, take them off the streets, and the whole thing falls apart.
That's right. That's right. And, but of course, it also, well, from the perspective of, like, say you're trying to address it, it's not like there is anybody to negotiate with in order to try to diffuse whatever the reasons are for the protest either.
Right.
Which is a problem as well. I get that. I think that a lot of the politicians that are in certain places are quite frustrated at their inability, forget about, at how to grapple with it. I mean, you're reading about what's going on in Hong Kong, right? And the thing is that if you ask people, okay, what are they protesting about at this point? I mean, there are certain things that but you're not exactly sure.
Isn't there a list of like five demands or something in that case? But
there were some demands that specifically originally the reason there is discontent about, income inequality, housing, employment, which that is a pervasive problem in Hong Kong because of costs that are spiraling higher and higher. The Hong Kong influence, lack of electing direct representation.
Yes, it was direct representation. It was the
extradition law. The extradition law was the thing that touched it off. But right. Listen, the discontent was really, look, the discontent started a lot rooted in the into economic issues, okay, that people are grappling in a city that is that expensive, okay? And then you add all these other elements on top, and then you've got, you know, this.
So let's not dive too deep into any individual country. I want to sort of get at the commonalities here, but let's do some overview. You said you were personally impacted by a couple of these other countries.
Well, the Chile ones, okay, we were going to be participants in an event in Chile next week, which wound up being canceled because of the protests. It was an America's Forum for Digital Transformation and other things, America Digital, Digital America, and it was in Spanish, it was America Digital, and the event got canceled. I mean, they like right now they pushed it out to May. And I just, you know, look, my wife just came back from Colombia, and
there are protests happening there too.
Yes. And there were protests happening in not just in Bogota, in the capital, but also in the city of Cali, where she was just at right now, and told me that apparently a lot of looting and violence occurred in Cali. In Bogota, apparently the protests were peaceful, but not in Cali. I mean, yeah, it's so, yeah, we you know, I don't know. I understand actually why people are discontent. We've been talking about those same issues as some of the issues that are similar in the U.S. We're talking about unequal income distribution. We're talking about employment, housing, health, all of these things. And then you also add the, you know, politicians, the people are upset at the politicians for enriching themselves all over the place as well, at the expense of people, which is also something that is a big sore point with a lot of the folks protesting, yeah, as well.
And I'll admit, like, I rattled off a list of countries. I don't actually know what the specific issues are in some of those countries. But it's been very interesting to see these kinds of mass protests grow, especially in huge numbers of people.
Yes.
And using social media and other technologies to organize and get around the police and avoid the various measures that have been deployed against them. I saw some videos, I forget even which country it was in, where the protesters were using green lasers to defeat drones and confuse the police that were trying to get them. They made the police retreat by shining green lasers in their faces.
Did that work?
Yeah. Now, it might not always work everywhere, but in this one particular video I saw it did. And you see all of this happening in ways that we haven't really seen before. And so I wonder, how is this going to grow? Is this going to be something that 6 months from now, those all fizzled, they were all crushed. And also, for that matter, you mentioned like some of these issues being similar in the United States. Why aren't we seeing this here? You know?
Well, like I said, I think we saw quite a lot of I was even marched in a number of them protests.
I know you went to a protest. Year. I've been to a protest, a couple protests.
Think about it. We had
We don't have hundreds of thousands of people clogging the streets of Washington, D.C. every day.
No, not every day. No, we only had them like a couple of occasions, but not every day. No.
And that's what's happening in some of these countries.
Yeah. No, definitely. That has been a repeat occurrence. Yes. I don't think in Hong Kong right now the numbers of protesters are in the millions. There are significant, but it's not the same way as the protests were originally as well. It's definitely not at that level, at least according to my people I work with who have told me about what the situation is right now. It's not, I mean, the groups of people on the street are not as
big as they were.
Yeah. They are determined, but they're not as big.
Yeah, well, as you said with the U.S. example, right? It's hard to keep up the momentum if you don't, like, win. right?
Well, yeah.
If you see these things like, you know, grow rapidly into a revolution and the government saying, okay, we give up, we'll give you what you want, or the president like fleeing the country on a plane to some safe third country, or
that
whatever.
Happened with Ecuador, which that definitely happened in Ecuador, that definitely, or I don't know,
right,
or Bolivia, or am I saying
Bolivia?
My country, Bolivia. Sorry, Bolivia.
Right. You know, and so if you see that, then okay, you just went from protest to revolution. But if you don't see that, then after a certain amount of time, people are like, okay, well, now what? And maybe actually, we should get back to our lives.
The same thing, because I was, you know, there in Puerto Rico. Look, in Puerto Rico, the protests eventually, look.
They got what they wanted.
They actually sustained it for a very lengthy period of time until basically he just resigned. I mean, I got to admit that was like extremely determined period. I mean, they just did not leave the streets until this guy.
Now, do we think a part of this, like, is there a correlation to the number of people who, what's the right way to put it, who are not otherwise occupied, where you have economies where there are lots of unemployed people who don't have sort of your regular job to go to every day and blah, blah, blah. So they're like, well, might as well go to the protest.
Right, right, right.
Which, you know, which is like when you look at the U.S., we've got record low unemployment, people, right, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Makes it a lot harder.
Like, if I want to, like, go and protest, I'm taking time off.
I mean, I can't stay in D.C. 3 months protesting. I mean, I just can't.
Right. Whereas, you know, there's... In many of these countries, and I'm speculating, I'm asking for your confirmation if I'm going the right direction, there is a huge class of people who are unemployed and don't have sort of a standard thing.
Not as much in Hong Kong, but definitely in Chile and in Bolivia, and specifically, which we've had the recent very big protest. The answer is yes. I mean,
and in Hong Kong, it was led by students, right? So that's a different picture as well.
Right, 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 right.
So I don't know,
but they were led by students, but there were quite a lot of people that were, you know, citizens and employees of companies that were involved, definitely. So,
oh yeah, and so I think this is something to watch. I think the technology is important here, which is why, by the way, like one of the places that's been having these protests has been Iran, and they shut off the internet. I don't remember if it's on again as of when we're recording.
That's one way of dealing with it, I guess.
But they were the internet was off for several days. It may still be off at this moment. I'm not sure. But basically, they're trying to cut off all of those communication routes so that that can't happen.
Right.
And so, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's the protests. I don't know that we had a lot of additional insight there, but I think it was worth noting that that's happening.
Yes.
Okay. Next, Israel, what's going on there?
Gridlock. I mean, let's see.
At least they got to indict their prime minister.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
You know,
finally Bibi is indicted. And, you know, and then I heard that Trump hasn't been. Did you hear the comment about why Trump hasn't, like, tweeted any support for BB lately or anything, whatever?
Yeah, he doesn't hang out with losers.
That's basically it. Yes.
So aside from BB being indicted for a bunch of corruption related things.
Right.
Also, both he and the second place party have announced that they have not been able to form a coalition. They have not been able to form a government, which means we're probably heading towards a third election there.
I know that's one way of dealing with this. Which was the country that took for, well, Belgium, right? Wasn't Belgium without a government for like forever?
It took years.
It was at least a year. They were like, you know, they couldn't form a government for a long time. Let me see. It took It took over a year. Okay. Yeah. Towards the end of July 2011, as government formation had been dragging on for over a year, then they finally reached a deal to form some kind of government. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So.
Well, in the Israel situation, I've also heard commenters say, look, part of it is Likud hanging on to Netanyahu.
Right. Oh, it's a big part.
If they were willing to just give him the boot, Likud could probably make a coalition without him.
Correct.
But nobody's willing to work with him.
Right. Nobody wants to work with him. That's the problem.
So the usual mess there. And in the midst of all this, there was another flare up with Gaza. You know, so it's not like, you know, this is all happening in a period of calm and peace.
And they were firing and stuff at whatever. And Syria. My understanding is right now, from what I read in reports, is that there is no formal leader, okay, like right now. I heard that one of the military leaders said, look, we're working over here, and we know we don't have a leader for the government, and so we would really like to work on a strategy, but we really, you know, need somebody to tell us what the hell we're doing.
Well, isn't Bibi still technically like a caretaker prime minister until a new government?
Apparently not. Not my understanding is no.
Not anymore, because he was indicted.
Correct. So, no. I mean, that was my And somebody could correct me, but I read this report specifically from a Israeli military leader talking about the action in Syria and talking about how they could not sustain knowing what the hell to do without leadership. Period. That's what he said. And I was just like taken aback by that because I thought the same thing as you did. Well, doesn't he like caretake this until like whatever? And it seemed like from that statement that the answer no.
So no. He is still the prime minister of Israel. It may be a caretaker spot, but he is still there.
He is still there. Then yes. I'm wondering why they got to indict him. No. Why the military leader was saying that about the situation? I mean, is he still like a caretaker, or is it just that even you know because does. Although he may be there in the office, is there something that precludes him right now from really taking any formal action of, you know, of types, I guess is the question. You see what I'm saying?
I presume this sort of a look, the bottom line is, I don't know. You don't know. But
no, I don't know. But obviously there is a leader. Obviously, I believe that people...
Yeah, usually in these kinds of situations, a lot of it is sort of informal, right? They can't have a situation where there is nobody, right?
Right.
So he's got the powers of the office. But in most parliamentary systems like this, is sort of an acknowledgement that if you're in this kind of situation, you really shouldn't do anything major because you don't have that mandate. But I don't know that there's anything actually stopping it, except for the fact that like passing a law still requires a majority of the Knesset, right?
Right.
So if he
doesn't have one.
And he doesn't have one. So there's some limitations, but for things like, I mean, you know, he's launched attacks on Syria within this week.
But that's what I was saying. I understood that the military said that they took those without the direction of the prime minister. And that's what confused the hell out of me.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, they're fucked.
As usual, Israel is confusing and all kinds of things going on that are, you know, for people like us who are not by any means experts in what the hell is going on there, it's just very confusing.
Right.
You look at the list of parties and how much they have, and, you know, it's hard to understand what they're even for and what, you know, and look, they're. Yeah, if you are a listener of this show and you do know a lot about this, you know, feel free to contact us, feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com. We'd love to have you on to explain it all.
There is an interim government like act that they have. Okay. All right. That apparently regulates this. So apparently there is because this isn't the first time this has happened. There is an interim act that I guess it regulates what they can. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This conversation, by the way, is what makes us deserve the review we got that says a couple of guys talking about things they have no idea about, or whatever the exact words were.
We found them. Hey, found the answers. Give me a fucking break.
You know, we like, okay. Every once in a while, we just go off on a topic. We have no idea.
We are experts in certain things. This is not one of them.
Yes. Now, and look, even our main topics, I mean, clearly this is not our day job. You know, we are not like, we don't have PhDs
Give me a couple of producers and give me a couple of people and feed me some lines and some guy with a freaking thing in my ear telling me, hey, his name is whatever. Then, you know, yeah, I'd be doing this a hell of a lot better.
Okay, let's move on from a topic we know nothing about to something else that we know nothing about. Let's do Steve Miller next, and then we'll talk about the Democratic debate. So Steve Miller basically runs the Trump administration's immigration policies. He has since the beginning. I don't even know what his formal title is. He's an advisor of some sort, but all of the people who actually run agencies and stuff have been basically told, do what Steve tells you to. Mm-hmm. And he was the architect of the Muslim ban. He was the architect of all of the child separation policies and all of the things that the Trump administration has been known for on the immigration side. Almost all of them come from Steve Miller. And frankly, it's been known for a long time that, look, he's a white nationalist.
Yes.
He's a white supremacist. This is who he is, just like Steve Bannon was before him. But what happened this week is a whole bunch of emails surfaced that he had sent, I believe, while he was emails from Breitbart.
To Breitbart. Right.
From Stephen Miller, suggesting things that they should write stories on. And I believe these emails were from once he was already in the White House. Am I wrong?
I heard that some were from when he was in the White House already. Yes.
Yeah. And maybe some were from before as well, but some were from while he was in the White House.
Right.
And, basically he was forwarding them articles from, you know, known white supremacist news sites and newsletters. He recommended a horribly racist novel, all of this kind of stuff. And this leak comes from someone who used to work at Breitbart and used to be a true believer in all this stuff and subsequently left and sort of has had an epiphany and decided that her previous ways were wrong. And so as part of this, she shared some of these emails.
Nice.
And so what do you do? I mean, I saw one comment that says, hey, look, the open secret here is that practically any reporter in Washington, D.C. has gotten emails like this directly from Miller back when he worked for Jeff Sessions, when Jeff Sessions was a senator. And so everybody knows this. But all of a sudden, the fact that we've got these letters in front of us have a whole bunch of people calling for his resignation, things like that, or for Donald Trump to fire him. Of course, that's not happening.
Right. Oh, he might fire him. I mean, I don't know if to say that. Hey, what the hell? He's fired just about everybody. Why not him?
Well, but if he does, it's going to be for some other reason. It's not going to be.
Oh, yeah. It's not for this. Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, because, look, this was the whole point. I mean, I'm sorry for people who are still in denial about this, but the whole Trump enterprise has been a racist white nationalist enterprise.
Yep.
You know, this is a major theme of what this administration is trying to do, you know, and of all the people in the administration, Steve Miller has probably been the most successful at carrying out the Trump agenda on this item.
Yep.
This is not something that Trump doesn't want. You know, I mean, he came out when he announced he was running for president and started talking about the Mexican rapists.
I thought that every presidential candidate did that, but okay.
Yeah, I think that was one of Elizabeth Warren's main themes as well.
Of course. Yes.
This is the whole point. You know, no, he's not going to fire him for this.
He's not going to fire him for this. No, he hired him for this.
Exactly. And so I get that people are all like up in arms about it because there's new evidence, but there was plenty of old evidence too.
Yes.
You know, this is not new. This is not a surprise. It's just one of those things where it's so obvious it smacks you in the face. And so it makes headlines for a while, but they're going to push on right past this. You know, I don't expect he's going anywhere. I mean, maybe there'll be a surprise and I'll be proven wrong, but come on.
Yep.
And again, like, who was surprised? Like, there were all kinds of people expressing outrage, and it's like, really? Now?
No, I was not surprised. Not in the slightest, though.
Okay. Last topic, unless you come up with something new, Yvonne, the Democratic debates. There was another Democratic debate last night, on Wednesday night.
There was the Democratic debates, including the Russian mole. You mean those debates?
Are you going to go off on Tulsi Gabbard again? Because, you know, you did last week, you've done it before.
I hate her. Can I mention that I hate her?
I think you have, Yvonne.
I mean, you know, if she went and like tripped right in front of me and like fell flat on her face, I would be laughing her my ass off.
Okay. So yes, there were 10 candidates, one of whom was Tulsi Gabbard, who Yvonne really, 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 really doesn't like.
I don't think I'm in an exclusive club on that.
You are not. In the latest Real Clear Politics average, she is at 2% even.
Wow.
Now, having said that, that puts her ahead of Klobuchar, Steyer, Booker, Castro, Bennett, Delaney, Bullock, and Williamson.
All you people voting for this moron ahead of Klobuchar are not Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't think they can be.
I mean, the pattern we see over and over again with her is that she is the most like Democrat among non-Democrats, specifically among Republicans. I don't know. I don't think it's, you know, look, the debate this week, I will admit, there were only really three memorable moments, and two of them involved Tulsi Gabbard. Because Tulsi Gabbard got into a fight with Kamala Harris, and Tulsi Gabbard got in a fight with Pete Buttigieg.
Yep.
Now, on the Harris one, my initial impression of it myself was that Harris reacted in a way that did not come across well for her, because I thought even engaging with Gabbard on this diminished her and made her seem petty. However, the reaction I saw from most other people who saw it was actually fairly positive for Harris, saying this is what she should have done the first time Gabbard came after her in the previous debate, and she put Gabbard in her place, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, my initial impression was slightly different, but I seem to be in the minority on that one. Most people think that Harris won that exchange. Again, you know, most people, like whatever I'm seeing on Twitter and on the talking heads on TV, right? Like, who knows really if you polled it. And then also on the Buttigieg exchange, most people seem to think Buttigieg won that exchange as well. But in both cases, I actually think Tulsi held her own. She did fine. I mean, like the mere fact that she was engaging with top five candidates like Buttigieg and Harris elevates her.
Right.
Just by the fact that she's in that conversation.
Yeah.
And she was articulate. She said what she wanted to say. She attacked. I think you're right that what her positions are very different than all of the rest of the Democrats, especially on foreign policy. She doesn't talk very much about other stuff. I mean, her constant theme is getting out of endless wars. And as I've said many times before, I want to get out of endless wars.
So do I.
I like that idea. But I don't think her particular approach to it is actually constructive.
Yeah, no, not particularly, no.
Okay. So those were two of the moments that came out of it. The third memorable moment, and this is for me, maybe other people had other memorable moments. I know there's, you know, there was an exchange with Buttigieg on race and some other stuff like that. But the other memorable moment for me was Joe Biden's gaffe of the night. He always has some sort of gaffe of the night.
Oh boy.
This time he was responding to a question about appealing to black voters. And he started talking about how he starts saying he came from the black community. And then he sort of quickly adjusts his words to say in terms of support.
Right.
You know, because, you know, what you're what when I was a young black boy? No. Joe Biden was not.
No.
But so he starts out when he was talking about, you know, his support came from the black community. And he's trying to talk up the fact that, and this is indisputably true right now, amongst African Americans, Joe Biden has more support than any of the other candidates, just like he does overall. He's doing very well on that front. But he started listing some endorsements he had. And one of the things is he said, and the only black woman senator ever elected supports me.
Oh, God.
And here's the thing. Kamala Harris was standing a few feet from him and is like, what? Because he meant... And he tried to correct himself, but he didn't correct himself. Like when people pointed this out, he's like, I said first. No, you didn't say first, Joe. Maybe you meant to say first, but that's not what you said.
No.
You said the only black woman senator endorsed you.
Yep.
When there was a black woman senator standing a few feet away from you.
Well.
Really? And so he didn't handle his correction smoothly. It just looked bad. But here's the thing. Those three things were all I can really remember from the debate. Like I said, the only other one that is even a contender, I guess, is Buttigieg was asked about his support in the black community, because basically he has none. And he started talking about how, you know, he was willing to work on that challenge, you know, something along those lines, and then pivoted to I understand the black community because I may not be black, but I'm gay. And I was and that also has problems in society. And from what I see, that particular analogy does not go over well in the African-American community. Like, I saw a lot of really negative reaction to that after he said that. So I'm not sure his effort really worked.
I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I'm stretching to get anecdotes from this debate because, first of all, they've still got way too many freaking people on the stage, you know? And I understand, I went back a while ago and compared, and yes, in 2016, we still had this many Republicans at the comparable stage in the process. So this is not unprecedented, but I think it's unhelpful. Like, it is really difficult. And it was in 2016 with that many Republicans too.
Right.
They probably should have winnowed that field way down a lot faster. And if they had, we probably wouldn't have Donald Trump today.
Probably.
Because all of the non-Trumps split, and so left Trump the winner, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's not helpful to have 10 people on the stage right now. I keep saying 5 is my number. I would have 5. And when I said that a little while ago, I justified, okay, that's everybody over 5% on the Real Clear Politics national average. If you took that criteria now, you'd actually be down to 4. Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg, because Harris has now dropped below 5%. And so, yeah, that's
pretty much the debate.
And I don't think it's going to do anything. This whole thing has been so stable so far.
I can't believe how many more debates there are, for God's
sake. There's one a month all the way through Super Tuesday.
Oh, for God's sakes, man. Can these debates end?
And possibly one a month after. They will not end until there is a nominee. That's how it works. There's one a month.
Have just five people on the stage.
I would like five. I think five is a good number now. We can get down to five. Maybe if you insist, six. But come on, let's stop with this 10. It's not enough time for anybody. And you got a bunch of the clearly also rans on the stage. But I was starting to say, overall, what we've seen so far in this race is Biden basically steady, Sanders basically steady, Warren went up,
surged,
and is back down again. So now we have Biden in clear number one, Sanders and Warren basically tied for number two, then Buttigieg, then Harris down significantly from there, and then everywhere else. And then, but, you know, one interesting thing, those are all national numbers, but, you know, we have Iowa and New Hampshire, and they look very different. Buttigieg is now winning in Iowa, and he's close to winning in New Hampshire. He's like way ahead in Iowa in the current average. In New Hampshire, he's basically a muddle, but he's close to the top. And all kinds of crazy stuff could happen. Like, if we have, you know, Buttigieg win Iowa, Warren win New Hampshire, then Biden comes in and wins Nevada and South Carolina, which is the current leaders in each of those states, then we have a mess going into Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know? And if we don't get some of these people to drop out, and one difference, there are two key differences for what happened to the Republicans in 2016 versus what might happen to the Democrats now. The Republicans had winner-take-all primaries. And that makes it very easy for a leader to gain momentum fast. The Democrats have none of that. It's proportional everywhere. Although,
yeah, but you don't get anything unless you win more than 15%.
15%.
Right. So that'll clear out a lot of people.
That will help clear things out for sure. Also, the Democrats got rid of their superdelegates.
Right.
So superdelegates last time around, you know, Hillary Clinton didn't need them to win. Like, no matter how you count, Hillary Clinton won.
That the Democrats didn't do anything that Bernie wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. They got rid of the superdelegates for the first round. If we get a brokered convention, the superdelegates come in on the second round.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so it's a little early to start talking about that, but you know, it's part of the traditional every 4 year cycle. There's a certain point in time where you have to start talking about brokered conventions, and then it never happens. But we're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
And that's it for the debate. It was boring. I don't think it's going to change anything in the dynamics of the race. We'll just continue to see, because in order for a debate to change anything, you have to have a big wow moment, and there was none.
You try to watch one again and see if I fall asleep during it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, maybe the next one.
Okay.
No, I think we've said before, maybe we'll try that for the first general election debate, if there is one. I'm still unconvinced Donald Trump will participate in one, but
yeah, you know, we know he'll bring notes. And on that note, okay.
On that note, is the end of the show. So thanks everybody for listening to yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. Oh, you know all the stuff. Do I really have to say it?
Yes, you do.
Feedback at curmudgeons-corner.com if you want to send us an email. Yvonne and I are both on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. If you'd love to give us money, which we always appreciate, you can go to patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. And at various levels, we'll mention you on the show. We'll send you a postcard. We'll send you a mug, including at $2 a month or more. getting an invitation to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of our listeners and co-hosts are talking throughout the week about the issues of the day and anything else fun that's going on. If you don't want to or can't give us money, just participate with the show in other ways, and we'll probably give you an invite too. And that's it. Hey, everybody, have a great week, and we'll be back again at the usual date and time. We'll be back next week, as usual, to talk about whatever happens this next week. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Later, Yvonne.
Good night.
Good night.